Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is July 3rd, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Beau is with me as usual. No special guests this week.
Special guests. Aw, we're not special anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I guess I could call my dog over, but you know.
Well, I got my dog right here, but I don't know if he want to say anything. Brownie, you want to say anything? Not particularly. No. He stayed sleeping.
Okay. Yeah, and the rest of my family is still asleep. Even like the lizard we have is.
You know, I have some unexpected guests in the house, but they are both sleeping. So
I'm going to have an unexpected guest in a couple weeks.
You're going to have an unexpected guest in a couple of weeks. Well, you see, if it's in a couple of weeks, then it's not unexpected anymore.
Oh. Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, unexpected guest means, like, what happened on Friday, where I'm on the couch sleeping. I actually was sick with something that I can't... Well, nobody could figure out what it was, but the bottom line, I feel fine. Okay? All right?
Yeah.
And I could not go to work for 3 days. Okay? I mean, I was feeling really bad. Okay? So on Friday, I was on the couch laying asleep, and I fell asleep with the TV on, which I don't normally do, and it was relatively loud. I wake up, and all of a sudden I see this guy, I see somebody in my house I don't even recognize. I'm like, who the hell are you? Not exactly, like, you know, the way to wake up.
It's someone you don't even recognize. Okay. That would be disturbing.
Yeah, my wife brought her little brother over here, and it was one of his friends.
Ah.
Okay, all right, who came over at the same time, but I'm like, what the fuck is this? So.
Excellent. So, well, my unexpected guess is more the form of someone who sent an email saying, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to be in Seattle for a job interview, you know. Can I stay with you for a couple days and hang out?
Well, but that's not totally unexpected.
It's not totally
right,
unexpected.
Right, it's 3 weeks in advance. Yeah. Anybody I know?
Yes.
Oh, okay. But we can't reveal that on TV? Okay.
Probably right, not. Anyway.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, all right.
Initials MD.
MD. Oh.
Anyway, let's move on.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting.
We have a couple topics scheduled for today.
Well, that won't go very well anyway. She'll never get the job. Anyway, all right. But I digress.
Very nice, Yvonne. You know, okay, she might be listening.
And she'll probably call me and bust my balls about the fact that maybe I'm doing some kind of reverse motivation technique now. Okay, there you go.
That's it.
Have you thought about that? Perhaps,
that's probably,
you know,
it.
Reverse psychology.
You know, anyway, we have a couple real topics, and it'll be nice to see our unexpected house guest. Anyway, a few real topics today. The last shuttle. The shuttle is supposed to launch for the last time a few days after we record this. If I follow my normal pattern, probably around the time I release the show. Now, of course, there's a significant portion of the time that these things end up getting delayed. So who knows if that'll be when it actually goes off. But we're approaching the last shuttle anyway, so good time to talk about it. The new HP tablet that came out. A little bit about the debt again, but specifically people have been talking a lot about the Obama administration using the 14th Amendment to bypass Congress on this. And then our good friend Muammar Gaddafi has been making threats again. So that's the agenda for today. And let's get started. So first of all, shuttles. Right before we started recording the show, when I mentioned the possible topic of the shuttles, which we'll talk about in earnest in a minute, Yvonne mentioned, you know, watching shuttle launches.
What I had mentioned was that I, you know, even though I've lived in Florida for the last 13 years, I mean, I've never actually gone up there to the Cape to actually see a shuttle launch. Now, I have seen launches, you know, I've actually had the TV on And actually, you know, all even all the way down from Miami, you can see when the launch happens. You can see it go up into the sky all the way from down here, even though we're about 150 miles away. You can see it. And so I've seen that at a distance multiple times. However, I've never actually gone to see a shuttle launch. And given that it's the last one, I was debating whether I should make the drive up to actually watch a launch. I mean, given that it's the last one.
Yeah. Here's my thought. We never went like super close. We lived when we lived in Florida in Melbourne and then in Palm Bay, which is a lot closer than Miami, but it's still like, you what, 30 miles away, something like that, 30, 40 miles away. From.
Is it that much? I thought you were a little bit closer.
Okay. No, I think it's about that. It was like a 45-minute drive or something, 30, 40 okay. minutes. Anyway, but we could see them pretty well from where we were. We didn't drive all the way up north for them.
You could feel when the rocket blasted, you couldn't feel it that far away, could you?
There was a pretty loud noise.
You could hear it a little bit.
Yeah, oh, you could definitely hear it.
Oh, you could.
It.
Okay. Okay.
I'll tell you though, my biggest regret from my time in Florida remains not a shuttle launch. There was a launch.
Didn't come visit me?
Yeah, that. You didn't visit me either. Anyway.
Wait. My family visited you, though.
Okay. Anyway.
Yes, we did not visit each other, which is rather bizarre. But anyway, all right.
Anyway, there was a launch that was in the middle of the night. The first launch when we lived there, I was like, oh, this is going to be – and it wasn't a shuttle. It was like they were launching – my memory may be faulty. I think it was the probe they were sending to Pluto, but it might have been the probe they were sending to Mercury. I don't know. One of those things.
What are the important probes?
Okay. Anyway, it was a night launch. It was going to be at something like 3 a.m, and I was all hyped to go see this launch, or not to go see the launch, but just to check out the launch, and you know we were going to stay up for it, and Amy and Brandy fell asleep, and. I decided
it's tough to stay up for those night launches.
I decided to let them sleep, and then I went outside, and for the 2 years we were in Florida, this one launch was by far the most spectacular of any of the launches the entire time we were there, and all of the others paled in comparison, including the shuttle launches. And I'm like, God damn it. Well, there were other night launches, but they weren't as powerful rockets as well. Because this one, we stepped outside the house, or I stepped outside the house, because I stupidly let everybody else sleep, and this was the one I should have woken them up for. But what did I know? I was like, they shoot them off every month, don't they? I went outside, and you could see, you know, because it was a night launch, the whole sky light up on one side. You could see sort of the flaming tower of smoke. And then a few seconds later, a really loud noise and all the windows were rattling and it was really cool. But like even the shuttle launches later never felt that powerful again and never looked as visually spectacular. But like the shuttles were okay from that distance. I gather they're a lot even better closer. But you can actually buy tickets to get up really close, but those go quickly. Everything else is just, you know, find a nice place by the highway to pull over and watch, you know, and get as close as you can manage, you know? And I'd say, you know, if you haven't seen one in the time you're there, go for it. It's the biggest launches you'll see until they replace the damn sucker, which is going to be like more than a decade. So, it'll be a while till they're launches of comparable size. So, you know, if you haven't seen one, yeah, I'd say it's worth going.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things, like somebody once again this week was, you know, I was reading an article regarding the shuttle launch and, talking a little bit about the whole. I mean, I to me, I'm still like scratching my head over the policy decision that let us just cancel the shuttle right now when we had worked on no replacement. I mean, no real replacement.
I mean, the bottom line is the things are old and unsafe. I mean, that...
Sure. What rocket is really that safe? Okay?
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
really,
no,
you're
no, but...
talking about mounting people atop of a fucking, basically, massive amount of fucking rocket fuel. Okay? All right?
Well,
and, like,
I'll launch them to space, for God's sake. The answer is, they made some fundamental design decisions on the shuttle that were proven to be bad. Like, the for instance, one of the big ones, the Apollo capsules, for instance, were designed such that the people were at the top. You know,
right.
The shuttle was designed so the people are in the middle. Why does that matter?
Yeah.
If the people are in the middle, if something breaks off the top, it falls and hits where the people are. You know,
right?
Yeah, that's one of the design flaws. The other, you know, is the whole. It was designed with the solid rockets, which by the very nature of how they operate, once you turn them on, you can't turn them off.
That's right.
You know, whereas the previous rockets that are based on liquid technology, and the shuttle does have liquid engines as well, liquid fuel engines, I should say. But it has the two very powerful solid rockets, basically. You know, and basically, you know, look, and you slam it for being old technology, but on the other hand, the what we're using in the meantime, at least until sort of private options spin up, is the Russian Soyuz, which is even older technology. However, that they've proven to be more reliable over the years, anyway.
True.
And so, you know, fundamentally, the whole program was based on some flawed assumptions that just it never turned out to be what it was supposed to be.
I don't disagree with that, but you know, it's the
but
same
yeah, we
thing
have
that,
nothing.
The argument
yeah.
that I have with my wife, where I'll tell you the stupid argument. She goes, looks at my toothbrush. It's kind of worn. She throws it out, but then doesn't look if we have any more toothbrushes. So a couple of times she's thrown out the last toothbrush I got, and there's no other fucking toothbrush. And I'm like, you know what? I'd rather have my old worn toothbrush than no toothbrush at all. Okay? I mean...
Yeah.
All right? And I'm like, okay, great. There are all these flaws with it. I get it. I got it.
Well, you know,
we thought that we'd be launching them like every two weeks.
Yeah.
We thought every week or some shit like that, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, you know, it was way more complex than that. We couldn't do that. There was not as reliable. It wasn't that easy to put together, et cetera, so forth and so on. You know, yes, but we didn't have anything to replace the damn thing with.
Well, you know, look, the determination was that all of the, you know, putting satellites into orbit and that kind of stuff can be done cheaper, easier, better with unmanned vehicles.
True. True.
The space station is the only thing that requires people on a regular basis at this point, and we do have a way to get there. It's called the Russians.
Yeah, but
I know it's not our own.
To move but let's face it, the cargo payload of the shuttle, especially if we're going to ferry stuff up to space, was far bigger than those individual launch rockets. Okay, if we wanted to ferry cargo and people up to the space station, there's no other vehicle that could do that in that kind of volume. The other thing that I understood was
you just send
the shuttle,
more smaller ones instead.
Well, you have to send a lot more smaller ones, okay? But the other thing was that I don't know if I understood this correctly, but I thought somebody mentioned that in order to keep the space station and to move it in space or to keep it in orbit or something like that, that somehow without the space shuttle that becomes a little bit more difficult because you could use the shuttle to actually move the station.
Yeah, you can use the Soyuzes for that too. I mean, basically, yes, every once in a while the station got a little extra boost, but they've done that with unmanned vehicles for that matter, let alone and the Soyuzes as well, because they have unmanned supply rockets that go up there too that just, you know, have a bunch of
yes.
stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and so I don't think that's an immediate issue for them. Now, you know, who knows? If there's a large-scale thing that had to be done, well, you're out of luck. I mean, the administration also is gambling on the fact that they're pushing sort of for private companies to pick up the slack. And there are one or two private companies who are getting themselves ready and pushing to, as quickly as possible, be in a position that they, too, can deliver supplies to the space station. And potentially even people.
Okay.
You know, so one of the ways that this was put was, you know, that this was a method to encourage the offloading of a lot of this onto the private sector instead of the public sector. I don't know.
Is that really such a good idea? I mean,
I'll be honest. I wish we weren't having this gap either. I understand all the reasons for shutting down, but I think the idea of going into a gap with no manned spaceflight from this country is at least a shame, you know. Is it strictly necessary? No, probably not. We probably don't need a manned spaceflight program at all, to be honest. I mean, the unmanned stuff, you know, is more cost-effective for science, usually gets better science done. You know, certainly for, you know, lobbing satellites up into orbit, you don't usually need people going with it. You know, so do we need a manned spaceflight program? We probably don't need one, but it's one of those points of pride. And, you know,
there's a lot of shit that we don't need that we have, for God's sakes, you know?
And people complain about budget cutting, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, in relative terms, the space program is relatively tiny in terms of what we spend money on. But, you know, nonetheless, the thing is they didn't have a viable replacement. Like, at this point, if they were going to really
Probably 1 month of, like, Iraq and Afghanistan covers more than 1 year of the fucking space program.
I think the ratio is even bigger than that. I don't know. We should look it up.
I'll be conservative on that number. I know it's probably, you know, it's probably not even, like, 2 weeks of fucking Iraq and Afghanistan we can fucking cover this space program for one fucking year, for God's sakes. And with certainly a lot more benefits, you know, to science, you know, humanity, you know, shit, you know. I don't know. I mean, you know, weren't we supposed to be already, like, in Mars or something? I mean, I don't know. I mean, honestly, it's quite disappointing, to be honest with you.
The thing is, in order to, you know, move... So, I just looked it up, by the way. The annual budget of NASA is $18.7 billion a year.
Yeah, I knew it was somewhere around $15 billion, okay? Yeah.
So,
and yes, we spend about $200 billion a year in frickin' Iraq and Afghanistan, at least... $200 to $300 billion. So yeah, 2 weeks. Okay. Now that shit covers the whole fucking space program. Okay.
So anyway, but the thing is, like, if we had wanted to be in a position where we were ready with something else to replace the shuttle, we would have had to start a decade ago. You know,
right?
And we just plain didn't. I mean, it wasn't a source of priority, and you know, and so even like there's been back and forth on what the shuttle replacement is. I mean, that's not entirely clear at this point anyway, what the hell we're actually building. There's, you know, there was a plan put forward, and then Obama canceled it, and then Congress said, no, we're going to fund it anyway. And then, you know, there's a lot of chaos there, and it's not entirely clear what's actually going to happen and turn up at the end of the whole process. But the process is long. You know, anyway, so we're a long way away, you know, and yeah, I'm sure things are starting to move in various directions. There has been some of the preliminary work done, but there's still, like, you know, a fight over what it'll actually end up being in the end. And I don't know. Yeah. So, like, I agree. I'm discouraged. You know, the fact that there's no, you know, the little space station we have, well, as much of a technological accomplishment as it is rather dinky, you know, compared to, like, you know, what we saw in the movies were supposed to be there in 2001. I mean, come on, you know,
right.
Where's my little rotating space station with a Hilton on it? You know,
that's right.
There's no moon base. There's been no human, exploration outside of the Earth-Moon system at all. We haven't freaking gone back to the moon in almost 40 years. You know, the whole shuttle focus on low Earth orbit really was sort of like, in many ways, sort of a waste. I mean, sure,
And let me put it to you this way: the cost of I looked up the total program cost of Apollo was about, in today's dollars, about $200 billion. Okay, total. All right, total. Now, if you look at compared to the size of our current federal budget or the economy, or like I mentioned before, fucking one of these stupid wars. Any one of these stupid wars at your cost, we could have put another man on the fucking moon. And probably learned a lot more about, you know, where we came from, you know, the universe, you know, everything else, you know, by doing this. And honestly, I think that that would have probably been a lot more beneficial. I mean, yeah. Not for nothing.
Anyway,
what the hell did we do on the moon? I mean, we spent there so little time, honestly. I mean, you know, fuck, even on this planet, on Earth, we still keep finding and discovering shit that we didn't realize was in a certain way, okay, to this day. Whether it's in the oceans, whether it's in the Antarctic, whether it's in deep in the in some of the forests that we haven't explored as much, where we keep finding species, plants, other things that we didn't know existed. I mean, my God! I mean, how much time did we really spend on the moon? I mean, really researching it. Okay, so we went there. Oh well, we found a couple of rocks. Oh okay, well okay, all right, we're bored. We're done. That's all we did.
You're missing the fact that that was just the cover story.
Oh, that was the cover story?
And okay, in fact, we found the monolith, evidence of aliens, we're talking to little green guys, the whole deal.
Oh, okay, so we've got that's all at Area 51. Okay.
Either that, or the whole moon landing was in a soundstage in Hollywood.
That's right, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, for anybody who has any doubt, I, of course, don't believe either of those things, because I'm not insane. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll come back. Next topic on tap, the HP tablet. We'll be right back after this exciting whatever it is.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouses' misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notellmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
Okay, here we are. So
we are here.
I believe your former company did something, Yvonne. What did they do?
It's HP tablet. It sucks.
Is that what it's called? It's called something else, right?
It's called the let me look it up.
The something something.
It's not the playbook.
You can't
is the
even
Black
remember
Mirror,
its right? name. I was gonna say playbook too, but I realized that was
no.
Touchpad.
Touchpad. Well, as far as I can tell, it's very buggy is the main problem. Okay.
Always a good thing in a tablet.
They two things that happened with it. Actually, they mentioned that the interface and the stuff, the design is really good, but two big problems. It's very buggy. There's very few apps. Okay, which I mean, understandable. But there's very few apps, and the battery life is shorter than the competition, significantly shorter, by about 30%, okay?
And how's the price point?
The price point is actually decent. It's $499 with Wi-Fi only. So the price point, that they got right.
Okay.
But you know, the problem that when you're offering something like this, let's face it, one of the things that was good about getting the original iPad, it wasn't buggy.
Right.
I mean, I didn't grab this thing and it was full of bugs. I mean, it wasn't buggy. And I'm like, I mean, you can't, I mean, I don't understand why everybody else always has such a problem with launching a product. And I'm like, what the fuck? Didn't you give people to test it? I mean, really? I mean, these are like obvious bugs. We're not talking about like, you know.
Well, you know, they're two different things. There's one, like, you know, I mean, Apple obviously could have released something years earlier than it did. But they waited till they were really, really happy, you know, and said, this is going to kick ass and it's going to be perfect and it's going to blow everybody's socks off. All of these other companies are at the further disadvantage that they're already behind. So they're all in a hurry and they all want to get something out as fast as they possibly can. And then they shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, they're kind of in a no-win situation because on the one hand, you know, they release something that's buggy and everybody's like, what the hell is this piece of crap? You know, the iPad's so much better.
And then you get yourself killed.
Or they say it's not ready yet. But then they have to wait, what, another 6 months? You know, they're not in a good situation either way. So they're betting on being able to put it out like this and then fix it over time. I don't know if that's going to work for them. But
let me give you. I also ran into plenty of bugs in my tests, even though HP said I was testing a production unit. For instance, on various occasions, the email app failed to display the contents of messages. The photo app failed to display pictures. The game Angry Birds crashed repeatedly. I mean, come on, man. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, really, I mean, I'm sorry, but you're testing this thing up until, like, I don't know how long before you get the final production units at the hand, which probably... it probably had to be a couple of months ago because, you know, let's face it. I mean, before you send it to production. But my God, I'm like, okay, dude, if you're using it and Angry Birds keeps crashing, dude, do you not think that this one has a problem?
Well, it's also interesting. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't some HP person make some comments this last week that indicated that, you know, they're not trying to go after the iPad market. They're trying to produce a tablet that's better for enterprise.
I did not read those comments.
I'll see if I can find that.
Because I did not read those comments, and I'd be shocked if they did. I'll tell you the
Maybe it was somebody
over the last.
You know, it was probably somebody commenting on it rather than them themselves.
I mean, that comment sounds like something that the boys at Research in Motion would say instead of like the HP.
Oh, they had a nice little memo this week too, by the way. But
had a gorgeous little memo about the fact that everything sucks. But yesterday. Not for nothing. I for the first time was playing with a BlackBerry Dud. I mean Storm. Okay, all right. The touch screen phone, which was released well over a year ago and has received no updates. And I got to tell you something. You grab the BlackBerry Storm. It looks. I mean, I have a 3GS, which is a year and a half old. It's even older, you know, than that thing. It feels ancient, okay? All right? It's like the screen is crappy. The interface sucks. I'm like, I got somebody who's using it, and they tell me that the fucking thing crashes on them. Like, you know, it's like that damn thing it's a nonstop crash machine, okay? And I'm just like, I mean, I'm like, gosh. I'm like, what the hell? I mean, I'm like, you know, didn't somebody at Research in Motion grab this thing and put it right beside the iPhone and realize, gosh, this thing sucks. We need to work on this a little bit more. Just do that. Okay? And the thing about it was, I'll tell you just what the biggest thing was. The text on the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It looked crappy. I mean, it's like you look at the text on it, and it's not crisp. It's not smooth. It's jagged, blocky text. Okay? All right? And you're making a fucking phone that you're supposed to be using as a little handheld computer, and I'm sorry, if you can't even get big letters to look nice and smooth on the stupid screen, dude, you have a problem, okay? And you think that something that obvious would pop up, but then you read the memos, obviously. It seems like everybody at Research and Motion the last couple of years has just gone into this fucking tunnel vision scenario where they're like failing to acknowledge reality, and that I guess
so. Let me, I found the quotes, so let me give you the quotes from HP on this. It actually is from someone on HP. First of all, it's from loopinsight.com, an interview that Jim Dalrymple did with Richard Karas, HP's vice president of worldwide developer relations. There are a bunch of quotes in this article. It was published June 30th. But the relevant one here is this, from the article. HP acknowledged Apple's dominance in the tablet market, but said Apple wasn't its target with the touchpad. Quote, "We think there's a better opportunity for us to go after the enterprise space and those customers that use PCs," said Karas. "This market is in its infancy, and there's plenty of room for both of us to grow." There's a couple comments from the guy writing the article, and then back to the quote. We think the world of Apple and have the utmost respect for their products," said Karas. "It would be ignorant for us to say that we are going to take the market away from Apple."
Well, look, I think it does make sense to target the enterprise market, because the one thing is that I've seen a lot of people in corporations right now trying to issue to people replacements for laptops. Okay, you know, you've got a number of people at the office that probably don't need a full-fledged computer to do their work, okay? That they can do with something that is less, that is easier to deploy, that is less costly, that you can update software easily, that is a little bit more restrictive. Because let's face it, if you do it, if you, you know, the, I think the whatchamacallit, the touchpad or any of these, for example, have a similar software deployment platform as the iPad, which allows you to be able to tightly control what's on the machine. So what that means, for example, if you're an IT support person, that means, or an IT, a CIO, that means quite lower support costs, okay? I mean, versus a standard PC, which, you know, you get people that fucking download viruses and get junk and shit and whatever, and then you have to be working on these damn things. They have physical hard drives versus solid state drives, and so therefore, you know, hard drives crash, people lose data, you have to rebuild them, blah, blah, blah. So, hey, if you can figure out a way to give people lower cost devices that allow them to be able to do their work and reduce your IT support burden, I mean, I would say that they're looking at it. But, you know, and to have a viable option, that's great. But honestly, I mean, let's face it. The last couple of years, HP, the reason why they had shot to number one in worldwide PC market share was because they focused on the consumer market and not so much on the enterprise market. That's how they got ahead of Dell.
Right.
So to go right now and say, well, we're, you know, we don't really care about the consumers, we're going after business customers, I think that's just a bunch of fucking bullshit. Okay? I mean, yeah. Yes, there is an opportunity there at the business enterprise that deserves to be paid attention.
Well, the one thing that's smart about this is that they sort of acknowledge how much of a lead Apple has in this area and says, you know, in order to be successful here, at least in the short term, maybe we can do something else in the long term, but in the short term, we have to target something that's not quite the same as what Apple's targeting. Because they've got like a lock on that market, and so to make inroads, start by concentrating somewhere else, and then you can expand from there if you do well. Now, and obviously, if their initial rollout is a little rocky, like it apparently is, they're going to have a hard time with that. But, you know, the other thing I think they're doing that is one of those finally, for God's sakes, is the whole doing their own OS thing. And they're copying Apple's book in terms of controlling both the hardware and the software, which lets them potentially do all kinds of innovation that they can't when they're tied to, like, Microsoft's platform. And, you
That's
know,
right.
way back in the infancy of the computer industry, that was normal. Like, computer manufacturers all had their own operating systems. You know?
Everybody had their own OS. I mean, Radio Shack had TrizDOS. Apple had their what was that thing, the original one I'm talking about before the Mac, know, the OS for the Apple II. There was CPM, and everybody had their own flavor of CPM out there.
Honestly, of course, it was chaotic for users figuring out what to use and how the differences were between all these things. But at the same time, it let each one of these things really innovate independently. And we sort of, when Microsoft got the lock on the quote-unquote IBM PC compatible market and the operating systems on those, it turned that whole part of the industry into just a drive for the bottom on hardware, you know, because right. There was no differentiating on operating system. It was, you had what Microsoft gave you. And the only exception was Apple, which kept on their own road. And for a while, that didn't look like it was working out for Apple too well until, you know, Steve Jobs came back and turned things around. But, I think that's a good move on HP's part. Whether, you know, and they may not be executing exactly perfectly, but I think it's the right direction. Make it so that you are controlling a product from top to bottom, beginning to end. This is what we're offering, and you can see what your users like and don't like and change them without having to be dependent on some external company's product and release cycle and all the baggage they have hanging around it.
And they are getting kudos for the user interface. They are getting kudos with how the design itself, what the comments have been really related to bugs in this version.
And so they just have to fix that shit.
If they can fix those bugs, BlackBerry was getting a black eye just for the concept in the first place of the playbook. Because the playbook, the playbook, the way they launched it, required you to have a fucking BlackBerry for you to be able to use it in the first place.
Right.
And you couldn't read email on the freaking tablet if you didn't have a freaking BlackBerry. And I'm like, you know, let's face it, their market share right now of new phone sales has gone down to 13% in the United States. So that means that 87% of new buyers cannot actually use your tablet. I mean, hello? Problem with the concept. Okay?
Okay, let's take a break for the poem of the week. We'll be back. We'll be talking about the debt limit and the 14th Amendment and fun stuff like that. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
An Appeal to the Reckoner of Sand by Tiffany Midge. Archimedes set out to determine the number of grains of sand that fit into the universe. Dear Archimedes, there is so much to consider when you believe every grain of sand is a possible universe unto itself. Think of all the little gods who may or may not be asleep at the wheel, the hazards of creatures who forget to pray. Think of worlds that abandon their factories of gold for a more promising afterlife. Are they misguided, do you wonder? Think of all the others who will stay, so many micro-kingdoms armored with pearls and bones. Archimedes, there are 1,000 ways to listen to the rain, just as there are 1,000 ways to count your grains of sand. Tell me where the music of the rain travels after the twilight. Tell me the stories of beach glass, stars, and water. Einstein said only 2 things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. And he wasn't sure about the former. Aristotle distinguished between the actual and the potential, while Plato had 2 infinities, the great and the small. Archimedes, where do you stand? And the heart? Where is the heart in all of this? Shakespeare wrote of infinite love, abstract yet true as salt. You must have some explanation. In a parallel world lay a parallel world. In a particle lay a particle, within matter, matter. At 16, my first love gave me a gift just a week before drowning. His gift? An hourglass, a world of time entombed in yellow sand.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Starting up.
Okay, we are here, we are here, we are here, we are here. The debt limit. The one thing I wanted to mention, and I don't know how much there is to talk about this or not, but since the talks have continued to sort of go around in circles and not really get to a conclusion, there's been a lot of sort of testing the waters of an idea that basically the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution... and I should have looked up the exact words.
I got the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion shall not be questioned.
There you go. So people are basically suggesting that the presence of this in the Constitution makes the debt limit itself unconstitutional, and therefore the administration is free to ignore it if push comes to shove and we get there. Now, I've also read a few people analyzing this on various blogs saying, you know, actually, it says, you know, specifically the debt can't be questioned, including obligations like pensions. But that actually just doesn't mean that the debt limit is invalid. It just means that if we hit the debt limit, the only thing you can't touch is debt payments. And so you would have to stop paying everything else first.
Here's where it gets tricky.
Yes.
Because you could constitute by this payment of pensions a debt.
Yes.
Okay, so basically you can't, like, for example, since
you can't over... You can't touch Social Security. You can't touch You can't touch military pensions. You can't touch the actual interest, the actual payments on the debt instruments themselves. But
right,
every other service up for grabs.
Right,
you know, actually paying for the military doing their wars. Nope, so, can't
but,
do that.
But here's the thing:
actually paying so for the space shuttle that we were talking about. Nope, you know, everything else goes first.
But here is where you could make this. Here's the thing:
you could argue that any obligation was a debt of some sort.
Well, but here's the thing that I was going to say: if you take our budget and you cut it up, probably the area where we're having to borrow money for, you could argue you could use current cash flow to pay for all of that other shit, and you say, well, I'm only borrowing to pay Social Security and this stuff.
Yeah, but
you could make the argument for that.
You could make the argument for that, but if you're gonna have this argument, it seems like if you think that the debt limit itself, the existence of a debt limit, is not unconstitutional because of this amendment, but you do have to follow the constitutional amendment saying that you can't question the debt, then it seems like you have to stop paying everything else before you either issue new debt or don't pay the debt you have. Now, that's just one reading of it. I have heard people argue the whole range. Some people argue this is bullshit and the existence of this clause does not make the debt limit unconstitutional at all. I've heard other people say that, yeah, this is completely irrelevant to the discussion. I've heard other people say this lets the president completely ignore the debt limit and do whatever the fuck he wants. And then I've heard the argument that we were just talking about where you have to pay your debt, but, you know, in order to keep within the debt limit, you do have to stop paying for everything else. Anyway, if it gets to this point, it'll be a mess. I mean, the other thing that people have pointed out, which is very interesting and which I think is yet another example that points out an egregious flaw in our system as it exists today, which is if the president did decide, completely ignore this, whether or not the 14th Amendment causes it, if the president decided to completely ignore the debt limit and go over anyway without congressional authorization, there is no one who could sue in the courts to stop him because it's unclear who, if anybody, would have standing to take this to the courts, which would mean the only, and also the courts have shown in the past a great desire to keep out of those kind of balance of power division between the president and Congress questions. The court has often just said, this is a political question, let the Congress and the president work it out, which seems to me to be a little bit shirking their duties in that case. I mean, they're quite ready to jump in on all kinds of other issues where it seems like, you know, playing tiebreaker between the Congress and president is almost the most critical case that the Supreme Court could be involved in. But they traditionally don't like to do that. But basically, if the president just decided to ignore this what entirely and just keep spending anyway, even if we passed the debt limit, basically the only option to contest that would be impeaching the president. You know, there's not really, you know,
that's not going
to
happen.
There's not any clear case of anybody with standing to sue. And so that's the only other option. And yeah, you have with a Democratic controlled Senate, that's not, you know, they might be able to manage an impeachment in the House, much like they did with Clinton, but they wouldn't be able to manage a conviction, which would make it just, you know, months of theater, which of course, you know, if you were to do that in an election year, my God, you know,
talk about entertainment. Oh God. Now, I will say this, that would certainly give us quite a lot of fodder for us to be talking. We wouldn't have to be scrambling for topics.
I mean, you know, I mentioned last week or the week before, whenever we were talking about Libya and war powers and stuff like that, I think you could make a legitimate case that Obama should be impeached over Libya. I think,
but
at the same time, by those same standards, I think every president in the last 100 years could probably be impeached for one thing or another.
That's right.
But,
you could impeach George Bush Sr. for Somalia. You could have impeached, Panama, Bosnia for Clinton, Grenada for Reagan, maybe Carter.
I'm sure he did something.
I'm sure he did.
You know,
Nixon for sure. Well,
and even if it wasn't war powers, you could get you know,
Ford,
him on,
you know, was not there long enough. Let's see, but certainly Johnson, you know,
Kennedy, Bay of Pigs, Truman,
Kennedy,
Eisenhower.
We could have.
The point is, yes, that would be very entertaining, but it'll be hope. You know, this is the kind of thing you really hope to be worked out through normal process, as opposed to going through these kinds of things, which just open wide open, like constitutional questions that, you know, hell, maybe it would be better if they were actually resolved. But I worry that they'd be resolved in the wrong direction, which is basically giving the president carte blanche to do whatever the fuck he wants. And you do that too many times, and then what the hell's the point? You know, I don't know.
By the way, I'm reading a blog on Forbes regarding this, this debt ceiling negotiation. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's something that showed up about here. You know, talking about why they're considering the whole debt ceiling thing. The reason is, it says here, today we learned that the Republicans walked away from the very approach to resolving the deficit put forth by GOP members of the Congressional Joint Economic Committee just 3 months ago. They basically said that 3 months ago they suggested that a successful approach would involve successful fiscal consolidations average 85% spending cuts and 15% revenue increases. Okay. All right. So, and they actually put a chart. Okay. Report, the GOP report even provided a nifty pie chart that showed that they were willing to go to 85-15 and that could produce a compromise. Okay. By the way, the actual negotiation that they got to, that they walked up from the table away, was 83-17.
Mm-hmm.
And they still, you know, they still felt, even though they were that close, that they walked away from the deal.
Well, and we've mentioned before, there's a significant portion of the Republican caucus that just wants to do this. I mean, to let us hit the limit. And, you know, I don't know if it's enough of a proportion. Like, the leadership doesn't want this. The leadership is like, this is crazy. But they have to, like, keep their caucus in line and blah, blah, blah. I don't know what's going to happen there. But, you know, it is an interesting perspective. One way to look at this is, you know, we keep saying over and over, you know, the the presidential race depends in large part on the state of the economy the few months before the election.
Right.
Well, if you're a Republican, and you want to tank the economy
as much as possible,
and you you want to
Well,
and it was an interesting thing. There was another which congressional leader it was. Who was the one who walked away? Cantor. He was either Cantor or Bonnier or whatever.
Cantor.
I know that he's the one who walked away. But there was one of the leadership guys that there was an article on saying that, although there's not a recent disclosure, one of their last required disclosures of their financials indicated that they had, you know, a decent investment, not huge, but some investment in some fund that's basically short the bond market.
Well, there you go.
So,
but wait, but aren't they supposed to be in a blind trust or something?
Yes, they still have to. There's periodic disclosures or whatever. Anyway, they don't get to manage their own stuff. But anyway, I don't know. I don't know the details of that. I can't find the reference. So, but anyway, I don't want to like imply nefarious. Well, I am implying nefarious motives.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so I won't pretend that I'm not. Maybe they're. Maybe they are. It, completely honestly thinking that they're doing the right thing, but it certainly seems like extremely cynical political positioning where, like, everybody seems to ignore, well, I shouldn't say everybody, all of the leadership and the people who are actually at the forefront of this stuff seem to acknowledge that, yes, in the end, this has to happen. We have to raise the debt limit. If not, there could be catastrophic results. However, in the meantime, we're going to dick around with this for a while. You know, and
right.
And at the same time, you know, there are people on the more extreme edges of the party who are like, you know, let it burn! You know?
Burn, baby, burn! Oh, God.
Great. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. We're coming up on the deadlines. I guess, what is it, August 1st or August 2nd, somewhere beginning of August, that is the current expectation. However, I heard that there was some talk that the Fed may be able to figure out a few additional things to squeeze out a couple more weeks out of it to bring it closer to the end of August, when is the critical period. But And you know, there was an article, Nate Silver in the New York Times also had an analysis that says it seems like a lot of people are sort of counting on the fact that at a certain point the markets will get spooked and start heading south, and then like people will wake up and make a deal, but that's not necessarily the smartest way to, like, you know, put pressure on somebody to make a deal. Let's wait till the market completely tanks and goes into a panic and then we'll fix it.
You don't think that's it? You don't think that's the right approach?
You know, because as he pointed out, like, you know, it's sometimes not all that easy to reverse those things. It's not like, you know, market goes into a panic and then, you know, a week later we pass a law and market says, oh, well, never mind, and goes back to where it was.
Well, I mean, that's...
Sometimes that happens.
I mean, if you remember... Let's take the recent example. In 08, when TARP
When Congress at first rejected it, the market
Congress
tanked,
rejected it,
and then the House was like, shit, really? And they came back
and they passed it. But let's face it, I mean, the market was so spooked by it that the market went into a free fall from then on all the way through March.
Right. They did not bounce back the next day.
No, they did not. Even though there may have been a one-day bounce back, I mean, the fact is that the market just was annihilated.
So let's see what happens here, and you know, I guess based on your beliefs of what's going to happen here, you could put some bets on the market, you know, but you could do like the Republican Congress people are and short the market.
Oh yeah, great idea. I like that plan. Let me just, you know.
Okay, final break. We'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit about Libya and Gaddafi and blah blah blah, and then we'll wrap it up. Enjoy your break.
This is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you. I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break. A wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. 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 Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, here we are. So I guess Libya keeps going on. Gaddafi's still alive. Although we've semi-admitted that we're trying to kill him. Although we still occasionally put it in the terms of, well, you know, the whole command chain is, of course, a valid military target. Well, of course. Then, of course, by that logic, you know, people always say, you know, if you're in a conflict and you want to say, you know, the whole military command chain is a valid target because we're in, you know, well, I guess it's not a conflict. They're saying it's not a conflict. It's not hostilities. Because that would invoke the war.
No,
power.
We're not being hostile.
It's just a very friendly conflict.
Yes, these are just very friendly bombs. They're not, you know.
Anyway,
very nice bomb.
Anyway, but you know, you have to do the reverse. Like if Gaddafi's a legitimate target, then in self defense, so is Obama. You know, and so. I don't know.
I'm going to agree with you on that. I mean, this is the kind of shit that we walk into.
In wars like World War II, good old-fashioned wars, people did acknowledge that. Like, you know, it's not like anybody was rooting for somebody to try to assassinate FDR. However, you know, if Hitler had somehow managed to bomb the White House, everybody would have acknowledged, hey, well, it's war. Of course they're going to try to bomb the White House.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. But, you know, in this case, we're still trying to kill Gaddafi, but he's still alive. He's doing a good job of hiding. There have been some reports that, you know, the way he does it is he stays in a hotel room next to all the reporters. But, you know.
Well, that's a good plan. I like that plan.
It's a good plan, you know. But anyway, and I imagine he's moving around and changing things and blah, blah, blah. Who knows, you know. Anyway. But, you know, we'll probably eventually get him, but. Anyway, this week he
found Saddam like hiding in a dirt box. I mean, yeah,
exactly.
Think about it.
You know, Muammar's probably hiding in a dirt box too. Anyway, mm-hmm. But this week he stuck his head out and he did some threats. What did he threaten, Ivan?
He threatened Western Europe and whatever with I guess attacks.
Right.
That was his thing.
Now,
he threatened to attack Western Europe.
And
I'm not with what.
My next question to you. What is he exactly going to attack with? Well, and the answer is kind of obvious.
He's
not going to go in there with ships or planes or troops. He's not going to, you know, invade.
You don't think?
Yeah, he's not going to invade Spain
or
something.
Sicily.
Yeah. I don't think so. Although it would be really funny to watch if he did.
All of a sudden, like, you know, you go in and, like, do a marine landing kind of a thing, like, in Sicily, I mean, you know, all of a sudden.
Yeah. Anyway, I think if he's capable of doing anything, it's more likely your good old-fashioned terrorist attacks, you know.
He's had experience with that, so.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, this is the regime that, there's some controversy on the details, but, I mean, They almost even admitted it a couple years, blew up the Lockerbie flight in TWA.
Right, he blew up the Lockerbie flight, he blew up that disco in Berlin, and a few other things. He had somebody assassinated in London at one time as well.
There is some reach there. I mean, you know, I don't know how much, but... at this point, but it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility that
he
could create that kind of chaos somewhere in Europe.
Now, yeah, I mean, I guess.
Would it do much for his cause? I don't think so.
I mean, I don't know how the hell that helps him, I mean, if I'm honest. But, you know, other than just being a freaking pain in the... I mean, Yeah, I mean, but think about it this way. I guess if, like you mentioned, the thing about targeting FDR. I mean, we are. I mean, NATO is at war with this guy. I mean, yeah. Fucking bombing the bejesus out of him. I mean, why in the world shouldn't he feel entitled to be able to go and, like, strike back?
No, I hate to be, like, sort of taking the side of the enemy, and I'm really not here. But, you know, if this is, and there's the whole dispute about, is it a war? But what the hell do you expect the guy to do? Like, you expect him to just roll over and go away? I guess they did. That it was the expectation. But, you know, the thing is, if you attack somebody, fundamentally,
right.
You can't be like, oh my God, if they defend themselves.
Yes, oh my God, they counterattacked. I'm like, oh.
I mean, that.
Yeah.
And I realize that, you know, obviously the military, you know, plan for and account for, you know, resistance from the troops that are attacking. But, you know, taking it directly to your attacker is a well-known strategy. I mean, you know, they blew up the World Trade Centers. We went after Afghanistan. You know,
right.
And I'm not trying to draw a moral equivalence here either. However, when you're talking about nation states at war with each other, you know, and this is a war, regardless of what bullshit you call it and what, you know, UN resolutions exist, this is a war against the government of Libya. And there may be good reasons for that war, but in a war...
But it's still a war!
In a war, you expect the other guy to fight back. And that potentially includes, if they are capable of doing so, going after you. You know? And so all kinds of people are condemning, you know, Gaddafi for these statements. And, okay, fine, whatever, propaganda. But, you know, if... It's normal behavior. It's expected behavior. It's the kind of thing that, you know, to some extent, he would be negligent in not doing in terms of defending himself. And, you know, but I think the expectation really is, you know, if the UN and the US and Western Europe say this guy needs to leave, he just needs to say, okay, bye, I'll see you later. You know?
Yep.
And
yep.
I don't know. And to be clear, I am not rooting for Gaddafi here. I am not hoping that he successfully pulls off attacks in Europe, you know.
No. You know, but let's face it. We go, like, as usual, as we said before, you know, we go and we go into a war that we can't declare war. I mean, we don't declare war, but yet we're really at war. We do this whole fucking thing again and then, you know, don't understand why... Why the guy who we're bombing the bejesus out of maybe, you know, doesn't just you know, go and like just say, oh, okay, nice war, not yeah I don't want to fight back.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Anyway, I guess to wrap it up, one other thing I'll just mention just in passing, you know, in terms of places where we're having friendly, non-hostile, non-wars, at this point we are doing. Drone attacks on people in Afghanistan. I think we're still occasionally in Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen, and we just started doing it in Somalia too. So we're up to 5 countries now, and Libya, 6 countries now where we're actively doing drone attacks of some sort. Maybe it's died down in Iraq, and we can call it 5. But you know. Then these don't count. They're just drones. But we're actively killing people with drones in a whole bunch of different places. And, you know, and as this, you know, and again, sort of the claim has been made, well, since no American forces are actually in harm's way, you know, it's not actually hostilities. It's not actually combat. It's not subject to the, you know, these various rules associated with war. But, you know, as technology improves, I mean, in 10, 15, 20 years, we may be in a situation where, you know, you don't have to have actual human beings involved in these things at all, even on the ground. You know, I mean, you know, we've all seen the first Star Wars movies. You know, you can make battle droids, you know?
Well, why don't we just, instead of doing that and building those droids, why don't we just do it, you know, we could use, like, that game on the Xbox. What was it, Gears of War?
Mm-hmm.
We could just have wars like that, and whoever scores the most points wins.
There you go. Anyway.
No, you don't like that plan? I thought it was pretty good. I mean, hell, if they want to shoot the bejesus out of each other, well, then what the heck? Why don't we just, you know, okay, fine. Just do it on a virtual world.
Yes.
I think it would be a great advancement for world peace. And I don't think I'll get the Nobel Peace Prize for that suggestion.
You know, there's a classic Star Trek episode on exactly that premise. The computers sort of simulate the war between the two countries, and then whoever loses in one of the battles, the appropriate number of quote unquote casualties walk into like atomization chambers where they're just killed instantly and painlessly.
Well, I don't know. I didn't want that part. I just wanted to go for the points.
Anyway,
I thought I had an idea to eradicate war.
Anyway,
man. You know.
Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what Gaddafi does. How this Libya stuff plays out. But the trends are just really continuing to worry me. Not even the specific conflicts, but the trends on how these conflicts occur. It's just getting easier and more quote unquote painless from the point of view of the U.S. That we're just doing it in all kinds of cases instead of either exploring other options more fully, or imagine this, in some cases just saying, you know, it's not our conflict, let's not worry about it. Anyway, that's the show. Thank you everybody for joining us. Another Curmudgeon's Corner is complete and done and in the can, or on top of the waffle, or on the pancake, or something.
Something along those lines.
Can you tell I'm getting a little hungry? Anyway.
Yeah.
So, that's it. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts. And I'll see him soon. Sometime. Thing. We'll get back to you. We'll talk about it on the show, all that kind of other stuff. In the meantime, tell your friends to listen and tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Later.
Later.